latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
A triple crown for the ages wraps up with the Belmont Stakes on Saturday, June 8th. And no matter who you're betting in the Belmont, your best bet is with ExpressBet. ExpressBet's world-famous Belmont Stakes wager guide is available Friday, May 31st. It features analysis, insights, and picks from handicappers like Millie Ball, Steve Bick, and Jeff Siegel. Plus, cash in on ExpressBet's promotions, including a money-back guarantee on the Belmont Stakes and a 10% exacta bonus on Gold Cup Friday. And if you don't have an ExpressBet account yet, now is the perfect time to get started. New customers who sign up before the Belmont get up to a $500 welcome bonus. Your best bet is with ExpressBet. Visit ExpressBet.com to learn more. And remember to join ExpressBet on Saturday, June 8th to watch and bet the Belmont Stakes. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse offers the year-round excitement of live thoroughbred racing and full card simulcasting from tracks across the country. Check out hcpn.com for the latest racing calendar, wagering information, daily entries, and results. All you need to enjoy your day at the races. June 1st will be the biggest day ever at Penn National, highlighted by the $500,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile. First post, 2:45 p.m.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. And we're back with Mike Welsh, who is in New York, and he's tracking not just the Belmont horses, he's tracking all the stakes horses. And in fact, next week when it comes time for the Clocker Report, it'll be extensive, and there'll be plenty to go over. And with the Met Mile and everything else and the Belmont, it should be another blockbuster. And Mike, you even got glowing praise from Andy Beyer, who specifically cited the Clocker Report about Derby weekend. I don't know if that got back to you.
Yeah, no, actually, Andy called me the day after the races, you know, the day after, Sunday, the day after Derby weekend. And, you know, it was nice to hear from him and, you know someone of his stature, appreciated the work the whole crew did. And, you know, sure, he cast a couple of tickets, and that helped prompt the call. So, but I, you know, it's well appreciated that, you know, he uses it and has had success with the report, not only this Derby weekend, but in the past as well.
How much did he send you? How much money did he send you? That's what I'm curious about.
The check is in the mail, as far as I know.
Let's turn our attention.
I may note, though, before you go on, though,
yeah,
we're going to be doing a report for the 3 days leading up to the Derby, Belmont, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And speaking to my one of my bosses yesterday, it looks like the plan is to give the Thursday report out for free and then sell the Friday and Saturday edition. So that's tentatively the plan. I'm not sure
nice.
If that's been finalized yet. So just keep watching the DRF.com website or the ads in the paper and over the next week or so and to find out exactly what how that's going to be handled.
Excellent, excellent. That's a nice gesture, and it'll whet everybody's appetite for winners Friday and Saturday. And on that topic, let's talk Belmont. And I was going to ask about Tacitus first because of the work over the weekend, but there was some, I won't call it breaking news, but the Master Fencer today. What went on? Is he okay?
It sounds like, at the moment, it looks like everything was okay. Dave Grenning went back to the barn after the work and, looked at that point like everything was good. I think they're going to have a vet come by and reevaluate him this afternoon. Dave just got off the phone with the connections, and I think they told him 3 o'clock they're going to have him looked at again. So, you know, if there's a further update other than what Dave's going to report this morning, he'll have that later this afternoon on DRF.com. But as of now, it seems like he escaped anything serious. It looked a little scary, though, there from the time that he stumbled around the 16th pole and pulled up with the, pretty quickly after the wire with the rider, several times looking back over his shoulder. Apparently, his hind left leg, it seemed to be looking for some sort of indication that it might have been an issue, but he went off under his own power, and like I said, Dave went back to the barn, and at the moment, everything seems to be okay.
You noted that he worked in bell boots. I mean, first explain to people what the bell boot is and why they wouldn't have taken them off for him to work.
They usually just used it for protection purposes, and they told, and they only at when horses are jogging, almost never, if ever. I don't know if I ever recall even seeing a horse gallop in bell boots, rather, aside from working in them. They did tell Dave they were using it to protect some issue with him hitting himself, it sounded like, because of his long stride. And again, that'll be explained fully in Dave's story. Dave's doing a news story on the work, and I'm doing the workout report on it for the paper as well. But he was the order that we received up in the press box from the trainer was 5 furlongs, but it was clear that he broke off at the 7/8 pole and then was under a pretty good drive from the 3/8 pole to the 16th pole where things went a little bit amiss. And he was on his right lead, his left lead, his wrong lead, coming down the stretch. I've seen this from him before. He does have kind of an awkward, almost like a turfy kind of stride. And if I recall, I think he finished on his wrong lead in his very average-looking work prior to the Derby. But the rider was hitting him right-handed through much of the stretch, and then he switched to a left-hand stick, hit him pretty good a couple of times. At that point, he did switch back to his right lead, but he also stumbled a bit. And the rider, looked like he pitched a little bit out of the saddle. Got him back under the control, kind of eased him to the wire at that point, pulled him up shortly thereafter. I mean, his final time for 7/8 was, was 1:27.3, not horrible over this racetrack. He went off slow. He went off 26 for the first quarter mile and came home his last 5/8 in 1:01.3 despite the incident. And the track wasn't lightning fast this morning by any means as well. So from a time standpoint, the work was fine, but, just watching what happened and worrying now that there might be, some kind of an underlying issue that they're going to have to keep an eye on, even though he appears okay now. It wasn't what you want to see 10 days out before a race like the Belmont Stakes, or any race for that matter, but certainly for the Belmont Stakes.
Well, and it takes a little bit of the bloom, obviously, off what felt like, a blossoming rose, because he had galloped. I know yesterday you noted that he, really galloped strongly a mile and 5/8. And, there's plenty of people who were surprised and impressed the way he finished in the Derby.
Yeah, he was going to be a buzz horse here just because of that, I think, that effort in the last, last 6 furlongs of the Derby. But sometimes horses like that make up a lot of ground in races like that. you know, going a mile and a quarter. Don't necessarily carry those same runs, the extra quarter mile when they go a mile and a half. So, you know, you still are a little skeptical. You want to see him on the racetrack here. And obviously the first impression was a decent one the other day when he sort of had a, you know, a kind of a maximum security like mile blowout, if you will, with the last half and last 3/8 and 41 and change. But this was kind of disappointing today too. Julian Lepereau was actually supposed to come in and breeze him, but I understand his flight was canceled out of Kentucky, I guess last night, to get him in here in time for the work. So the exercise rider worked him, and maybe had Julian been on him, things would have gone a little differently. It, you know, obviously, we're not going to know, but just keep our fingers crossed and hope everything is fine. And the plan was, as far as I know, for him to come back and work again next Wednesday. So we'll see if that happens.
Beyond Master Fencer, obviously the big name on the grounds, Tacitus, and if there's a Empire Maker-esque scenario, it kind of feels like Tacitus the one. And you know, even to the extent, Mike, that you and Gary Young, when we were talking at the end of the Derby run-up, a lot of you were suggesting that really the Belmont was going to be Tacitus's time. That seems to be coming to fruition, and we're getting, even to the extent looking forward toward betting and morning line, that the two of them, that the two favorites, more of Will and Tacitus, you know, may be difficult to separate by post time Belmont Day.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how the wagering goes there. Tacitus is obviously now the buzz horse, I guess you could say, coming into this with maybe Master Fencer number two on that list. Now, War Will is kind of a conspicuous, not conspicuous, but out of sight, out of mind a little bit. You know, usually those buzzes come when the horses arrive at the scene of the races, whether it's Churchill Downs or here Belmont for the Belmont, and he's not going to do much once he gets here, but you know, he's created his own buzz by winning the Derby, so it'll be interesting to see how the bettors go, if they make War of Will a favorite, or the all the interest in Tacitus, and you know, heightened by a very excellent work here on Saturday, propels him to the post-time favoritism.
Talk about that work from the weekend, because it seems, I know that Mott seemed delighted, and you know, he's one of these horses that we even saw it that day in the inadvertent work that got Win-Win-Win involved, and of course Country House, that, you know, that ended up being turning out to be very important when we think about it in retrospect. But Tacitus,
well, it was certainly an interesting work.
Yeah,
and it was showed a little bit of improvement from him. But you know, you in some respect, you weren't sure if part of that came from all the competition around him. You know, the unexpected pair that joined up with him and Country House for that work. It propelled both of them to what might have been a little quicker times and better gallop outs than they normally would have expected. But it was an improvement from what I had seen in the morning from him in Florida, and certainly from a workout standpoint. Now, he looked really, really good galloping on a daily basis, I thought, leading up to the Derby. And I thought, you know, he had a real chance going in the way he was doing, just on a daily basis, not just from the work. But, you know, this work was certainly the one over the weekend was the best I've seen from him by far. The gallop out was terrific. Came back this morning with what I thought was an excellent gallop. You know, he looked very eager, very sound, very willing. His ears were up. He seemed like a happy horse. And, you know, he appears to be going into the race, you know, looking like he's sitting on his best effort. Yeah, the mile and a half, you know, breeding-wise suggests he should probably get it, but you just never know, you know, in those kind of situations. That's what makes the Belmont so intriguing, that added distance, you know, with all of these horses, you just never know what to expect.
Turning from Tacitus, let's work in the two the two runners from Todd Pletcher, and of course Pletcher's record in this race outstanding. You've also got Tax, who's been out on the training track regularly for Danny Gargan, and also Sir Winston, I suppose, can figure into this as well. The other horses that are all on the grounds.
Yeah, I thought of you know, they all looked fine over the weekend. They all, like I wrote, kind of got those kind of works where they were. Not so much asked, but were allowed to go out an extra quarter of a mile, you know, past the end of their works. Three of them were 5/8, and Tax was a half, but they all showed good energy on their gallop outs. I thought Spinoff worked with Last Judgment, who he'd worked with before leading up to the Derby, and Last Judgment actually had worked as well as any of Todd's horses coming out of Palm Beach Downs and going into Churchill Downs. How he ran last or wherever he finished in that allowance race off of what he had shown prior to getting to Kentucky, and then what he showed here in the work the other morning, I thought he was the best of the team with Spinoff, slightly so, but definitely better than the Belmont Bound Spinoff as far as, you know, holding the edge most of the way and going easily. Both of them, though, galloped out extremely well, so no knock on Spinoff. I just thought Last Judgment was a little better in that team. Tax when, on the training track was strictly a maintenance work, but his gallop out was excellent. And, you know, I know Danny Gargan's going to let him do a little bit more when he comes back for his final work over the weekend. Intrepid Heart I thought was very good. He only went a half mile as well with Outshine. They both galloped out with great energy. What was noteworthy about Intrepid Heart is he had blinkers on. Johnny V was aboard. This will be first-time blinkers for him in the Belmont if he keeps them on, and I see no reason why he won't after what he showed the other day. And I thought Sir Winston was good, too. He's obviously in good form coming off his last effort here. Had a target in front of him, was allowed to finish, and he did so well, and he galloped out strong. So, and he came back this morning a little later. I was getting a little worried. I hadn't seen him out there by 9, almost 9, 10 it had gotten to be, and he hadn't been out there yet, and then, oops, there he was, you know, going an easy, I guess he must have gone a mile and a half or so, but he looked fine today coming out of that work as well. So, you know, nothing to really knock here as far as the works go. Again, one more set of them to come next weekend for everybody, and we hope for Master Fencer as well. So those are usually the most telling, and again, as a clocker, you wish we got to see War of Will, you know, do a little more here, rather than have his major works in Kentucky. But and that's some people are questioning whether, you know, this track is a little quirky. So if that would be a little bit of a disadvantage not to have his final work over the track. But who's to question Mark Cassie with the way things have gone so far with War of Will or a lot of his horses lately? He's certainly been on a good roll, and I'm not going to second-guess his decision to leave him in Keeneland. I just wish from a personal standpoint, we got to see him have his final breeze here.
Well, and Davey Carroll, you know, supervising, and apparently one of the things they like is that it's much quieter at Keeneland than, you know, than Churchill, where they're racing and, you know, where there's just, you know, more, there's more traffic, et cetera, and that it really kind of suits him. Another horse that is
sure, that's a good reason to leave him there. I'm not not saying it's not a good decision.
No.
I just, you know, the only thing in the back of the mind is this is Belmont Park, and this track is, know, could be a little bit on a different kind of surface. But he will have a chance to get in here and gallop over it for a few mornings. So that might just be all he needs.
Well, and Everfast still at Churchill for Dale, and
he worked there this morning. I think he had an easy half mile or so there this morning, and I heard Dave talking to Dale Romans. He'll report on that. He's going to, I'm sure, come back and do a little something more serious next week before he gets on the plane and flies here. I think they come in Tuesday.
Well, and of course, Dale, in addition to those board hits, at Pimlico, at Preakness, he's had his share of board hits at Belmont's as well. And Everfast will have a new rider, right? We saw who did I see? Luis Saez landed on Everfast.
Well, if that's the case, it's a good decision. I mean, choosing Louis. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah,
obviously, you know, his last race slipping up the rail there and getting on the better part of the racetrack was pretty good pretty good ride in itself there. But going to Louis can never be a bad decision. He's one of my favorites, both in Florida and then up here in New York as well.
And Rosario, of course, siding with Sir Winston coming out of that second-place finish in the Peter Pan. The only other horse that's not on the grounds is Jovia, who's down at Monmouth and who worked on Saturday, which apparently helped motivate Greg Sacco to participate. And it doesn't look like, as I said earlier this morning, doesn't look like we're going to get Owendale. Mike, among the major players for the Met, I mean, that'll be the race that we talk about, I would think, next week as much as we talk about the Belmont.
Yeah, you know, I have to go through my book and I just see what we've had and haven't had. I haven't really looked over the starting
That's
lineups
cool.
for some of those other races. So and, we're going to save some of that stuff anyway for the clock report. You know, we don't want to give everything away on the air.
I hear you. I got it. I got it.
We did
no
have
doubt.
One horse this morning. Jimmy Jerkins, though, he did send out, and I'm not sure if the horse is going to run or not yet, but Candy Graham is coming off a couple of big allowance wins, did stretch his legs a little bit on the training track, went 49-1 with a really strong extra 5/8 and 101 and 4. I don't know if you want to call it a gallop out of it. It was a 5 from the 4. He was asked a little bit to finish, but, you know, it wasn't a major set-down kind of move, and if he is indeed going to run him in the Met Mile, I'm sure he'll do a little more with him next week as well.
Well, Candy Graham for Mongo. Candy Graham for Mongo. Mongo, just a pawn in the game of life. Mike, we should play Blazing Saddles on the way out today. Mike, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
We'll see you
Sunday, Monday. All right.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye.
Mike Welch. Let's take a break here, bottom of the hour, and we've got Seth Merrow yet and Rudy Brissett to close out the day. And for those of you that are some of you confused by those references? You've not seen Blazing Saddles. There's something wrong. I you know, there is that thing going on Twitter about what the five movies you've seen more than any other. I have not answered it publicly, but I don't know if I've seen Blazing Saddles. It would be close. I'm not. I don't think it would hit the top five. No, I think it would. I think it would fall short of the top five. I've been chewing on this a little bit. To my top five. Sweet Smell of Success would be one. And All About Eve is on that list, without fail. And Terms of Endearment. So there's three of mine. They're very funny. Bob Nastanovic, by the way. Nastanovic answered it yesterday. And he had a movie on his list that absolutely stunned me because I thought for many years I might have been the only person that ever saw it. Not that obscure, but it's pretty obscure. Man Facing Southeast. And I was stunned that it turned up on Nastanovich's list. Only reinforcing his incredible indie reputation. I mean, as an indie legend, that he would have Man Facing Southeast on his most watched list. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll finish up on what's been a fun, fast Wednesday at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You have my heart, and we'll never be worlds apart. Maybe in magazines, but you still be my star. Baby, cause in the dark, you can't see shiny cars. And that's when you need me there. With you,
we're back at the races. Coming back and happy that we could get a chance to talk to Rudy Brissett. And Rudy took a pretty clever maneuver over the weekend going out to Santa Anita for that Summertime Oaks. And that was a good spot, and comes away with My Majestic Rose, part of the assault that Flavian Pratt put on the Winner's Circle. And the daughter of Majestic Warrior, homebred for Judy Hicks. And Rudy, congratulations.
Good morning. Thank you, guys.
Good morning. And when did you make this decision? Because she broke her maiden, you know, leading up to Derby Week in the mud. And, you know, this was a pretty big gambit to go out there.
Well, we, you know, our maiden win was pretty impressive. We thought it was pretty impressive. And, we, you know, number back up the race, you know. She ran, I think it was an 82 Bayer, and the tall grass number were pretty good too. So we were kind of shopping around for maybe some black type. Like I say, as a breeder owner for Mrs. Ike, it's always good to try to get some black type. So, you know, well, I was in Pimlico, and I've been in touch with the racing office in Santa Anita, and they told me it was going to be a short field, and we studied the nomination, and we thought we were feeling pretty good in there. You know, the most difficult part was to try to get there, and we got lucky enough. We work close with Tech Sutton, and they are great people, and we were able to pull her in a plane and bring her there.
Well, and Flavian Pratt gets the call, and boy, between his agent Derek Lawson and you and Flavian, there was a lot of parlay going around. Quite a bit of French speakers in common here.
Yeah, it was special for me because you know, between Julian, Florent, and Flavian was the only one I didn't win a race and even never win a stakes too, so we knocked down those two, and we were able to partner with Julian before and won races and stakes, and Florent, of course, is my go-to guy right now, and then that was sweet to have Flavian on there.
there were a couple of parts about this that I thought were interesting. And, you know, she did two turn at Fairgrounds in her second start, and that didn't go well. And, you know, off of the win, which was the one turn mile at Churchill, talk about, you know, what you were thinking in terms of the two turns. And there was really also not a lot of speed in here. And so I'm just curious how, you know, you guys discussed approaching the race and how, you know, how concerned you were about her making the, you know, a successful two turn transition.
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure she wants to turn still. You know, it just the fact she's by Majestic Warrior and working all those years with Mr. Mott. I was actually around Majestic when he was with us, and you know, we always thought he may have been a better one turn or so. What happened in our second race in Fairground, I actually have no clue. I don't know. I guess she wasn't there. She was acting up a little bit at the post parade, and did I run up back too quick at 3 weeks? I'm still trying to answer the question about our second race, but you know, we can regroup after that, and then we add the blinkers and we restart from six furlong. The fact based on what we know is with Majestic Warrior, and it's funny because the bottom side is a Pleasant Tap mare who wants to run all day.
Sure.
So when we regroup, we keep, you know, we kind of kept in mind we could end up going two turn again, but we run our back at six furlong in Fairground. She got a good second, then we went seven furlong in Kinlong. She got another good second, and then she got the job done going a mile one turn. So it was a, you know, it's like we reset everything after the bad race, and then we try again, you know.
Outstanding. And you know, the way in which the pace unfolded, certainly, you know, the Hollendorfer filly that sneaking out, she, you know, she did figure to be the pace. There was a chance, I suppose, for Colonial Creed, even though she'd been on the lead, that was in turf tries, and I didn't think of her much as a pace factor. So the way Flavian, you know, kind of set up shop and made sure that he wasn't too far back, I thought that was important to stay within, you know, within hailing distance of her, of the leader.
Yeah, well, that's what we talked to. You know, we feel like somebody was going to put some pressure on sneaking out, and you know, Mike came out clean and went right up there, and he was not a hard pace, but he was enough to keep up. And for our case, you know, the blinkers kind of helped that filly to, you know, if you go back on our replay, when she was second, first time blinker second in Fairground, she pulled herself far back, and then she come close, and then the seventh column, you could see she start to understand what we were asking, and she was, you know, she was a hard pace, but she was only four or five legs off of it, and then when she broke on it, and she was right there on a hot pace too. So I guess it was a process to try to make her understand what we need. You know, it's all about putting yourself where you can win the race. And the first couple of races, she wasn't putting herself where she have a shot to win. You know, when you give yourself too much to do, it's impossible. Yep. even more on the dirt, and even more when you run those one turn race. So, you know, I gotta be honest, it was a process to get her there, but she was, you know, I guess she matured and was smart enough to understand what we were asking, and now we, you know, we don't really know where is our limit, you know.
Absolutely, this is a nice sequence. I mean, to break your maiden, and actually that came, of course, on a wet track. This was a fast track, and you know, you're learning more about her, and she's showing. You know, she's showing added maturity and ability, and certainly, you know, based where you are, you get, you know, at Keeneland, you get your choice. I mean, you could go after all kinds of things, Indiana Oaks and, you know, those kinds of prizes, Iowa Oaks, etc. Or you can bring her to Saratoga and try her, you know, a couple different options. You got plenty to look forward to with her.
Well, I mean, I run, you know, we run at 3 weeks, so, and, you know, she's a stakes, black type stakes winner now, so I guess everything we decide from now, it will be a bonus, you know.
Sure.
I mean, we, she's coming back tomorrow to our home base in Kinland, and then we gotta see how she bounces from that, but I don't think we need to pressure ourselves on anything. You know, we gotta have a string in Saratoga, so could be an option, or we can, like you said, we can stay home and then shop around and see. But you know, it's a good thing to deal with, you know, when you have those options.
Well, it also, you know, also has to be a you know, kind of a spirit lifter too. You know, you ran in a number of stakes over the last few weeks, Rudy, and let's be fair and honest. Some things didn't go the way you would have liked, and I stood close to you for the Chick Lang, and that race was as big a surprise as any that we've seen, frankly, you know, in recent memory. What was your postscript to Preamble's try, and what went wrong there?
Well, we got a couple tough ones the past couple of weeks in stakes wise, you know. Well, I mean, Preamble, right off the race, he could have fine, and the horse was acting up his own self. So we got him home, and we talked with the ownership, and we decided to do a full checkup on him, and you know, the result didn't come back as good as what we were expecting, so looks like he's going to need a little time off. Nothing bad, but when they need time, we have to make sure we give them time. So off of the race, and then the result of the checkup, we decided it was the right thing to do, to give a little time. So it's you got to regroup and do the right by the horse, and then if hopefully and usual, they come back and give you back, you know.
Absolutely. You also, so we'll wait and see, get him back later in the summer. And how about Talk Verve to me? You certainly, you know, seem to be moving in the right direction. And, you know, the Humana distaff, it's always a tough spot. And there's never a disgrace getting beat against that kind of a field.
Well, getting beat is one thing, but getting beat by 20 and finish dead last is another thing. So, you know. So, and even more when you know, you pick the one in a red one and you don't pick up your feet at all. So we do have an excuse there. She went on the minor surgery. She actually, untrapped, that day. So,
okay.
It was a tough one to swallow, I guess.
Sure.
But the filly is fine. Everything went very well. She stayed in the barn with us, and she's back galloping now. All is back to normal. So we will, like we usually do, regroup and breathe her back and find a race and make a plan with Mr. Irwin and see where she wants to take us, you know.
Try to get to the ballerina.
Well, I mean, it would be a good goal, but you know, you gotta get back breathing, and then, you know, it would be nice to get her back in a winner's circle before heading to a big one like this, you know. So,
okay.
More than likely, we will keep her one turn, but she's gonna tell us more than you know. It's difficult to make plan right now, I guess.
Fair enough. And let me ask you about one more before we ask about I got a first time starter tomorrow we're going to talk about. But the Black Album, where does he go next?
Well, the Black Album has been on sale today for the Penn Mile. So
good, 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 good.
On Saturday.
Excellent. I was gonna ask it, and I thought maybe they wouldn't come back that quick. I'm delighted, because I think. We'll certainly get a price on him in there. I, he's going to win something along the way, Rudy. He's okay.
Yeah, he is. You know, we got a little, same. We got a little unlucky in that race. He broke up in the air, and you know, we end up in second last on a very slow pace in the American turf, and he actually cut the corner and he closed pretty fast. Only got beat by two legs. So, you know, I think getting back to a mile is by Warren Bassett, who was a pretty good sprinter in Europe. So, I think mile and 16 may be okay, but I feel way more comfortable going a mile, and we should hopefully catch some fast ground, who I think will feel him better too. So, you know, hopefully we got a big effort on Saturday.
Excellent, excellent. Well, even before Saturday, and the whole, they're drawing the whole card for the match series and for the Penn Mile. Let's talk about tomorrow, because LNJ Foxwoods, the Roth family, who are really on a nice roll, the expensive purchase from last year, the $775,000 Uncle Mo filly, makes her debut. Drew the rail at Churchill in the sixth, La Chancla. And what do we know? How ready? She certainly seems to be working pretty sharp.
Well, it's a pretty nice family, and the filly has been training for a while since the beginning of the year in Payson, and we are like 8% winning first time out, so we can be, you know, we have to be a little careful there. I would say, the filly show every sign you like to see for being a good horse, but we got to take her there and show her what we're asking, and sometimes he take a race or two, and drawing the rail not always the either, but we got Florian on her, and then like I said, the filly she actually trained this morning in Churchill. We were there and kind of show her where she's going to run tomorrow, and we're going to go from there. It's definitely, we're looking forward to the runner.
Well, looking forward to seeing that race tomorrow. She's 6-1. She gets Florent Giroux, and certainly LNJ just rolling along. And the name is pretty funny. Do you know about the name?
Well, I think it's something about, it's a Spanish word for flip flop or something like that.
Yes.
Some of the guy explained to me, but I wasn't so sure.
Yes, Le Chancla is like a. It's not just the flip flop. It's also what a bad what a bad Latin child gets hit with when they get spanked is Le Chancla.
There we go.
It's a really cute name, and I'm curious how it gets received. But it makes the debut tomorrow, and it's a good field tomorrow, actually, of fillies. Steve Asmussen, Stone Street have got one, Mount Brave, and Larry Jones making a second start with Istan again, the Brary Jones homebred, and even more. The Catalano has got one for our man Bo Lane. A FedBiz filly, Blip Says Bye, which I'm going to assume is a sister to the other Blip filly that Bo, the stakes filly that Al Stahl had. So it's a good field. And Rudy, another graded stake win for you. Well, how's Quip, by the way, speaking of graded stake winners for you?
Quip is doing good. He breathed 2 days ago. We got a nice half a mile out 5.8, and he looked great. He's training well, and knock on the wood, we got 2 more weeks to get him there. But the Stephen Foster is the goal for the sprint.
And it's a good goal, and he'll be one of the choices. We'll see how that field comes together. Rudy, well done winning the Summertime Oaks and emerging filly there. The Black Album on Saturday. In the Penn Mile and much more. Good going. Stay well and keep them healthy and happy. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Rudy Brissette, everybody, and he really has done a nice job. And we got a couple of important updates there, I'd say, between Talk Viv needing a needing another, but there's another entrapped epiglottis. And so that's a valuable update. And then who got a preamble is going to get some time off. So make that note and say hello to Seth Merrill while you're doing it. Good morning.
Good morning. Movie talk, races. That's why I love your show.
Get
one of my favorite topics.
Well, that for you, certainly. What about you strike me as somebody who's seen Blazing Saddles more than eight times.
Well, as you were talking, Blazing, no. I've seen parts of it certainly more than eight times, but it's not my favorite Mel Brooks movie. Young Frankenstein is my favorite Mel Brooks movie. That's the one I've seen a number of times. And I'll tell people, if they've never seen Young Frankenstein, I have to believe clips are on the YouTube or whatever. Find the bookcase scene with the candle and find the scene where he tells all his pals, I'm going in the cell, lock the door behind me, and don't let me out no matter what I say.
How about a roll in the hay? Roll, roll, roll in the hay. Oh, God. It's so, you ain't got nobody. Just great. But I actually prefer Blazing Saddles to Young Frankenstein. I would guess because I'm a big Cleavon Little fan, I saw him in Pearly on Broadway, where he was great. Just great.
And for folks who weren't familiar with your reference, of course, Mongo, Alex Karras, who went on to, after a football career, he had a decent little acting career.
Sure he did. Absolutely did. Yeah. Absolutely did.
And by looking at the guy, that was not a prediction you were going to make.
You know, I'm just thinking too. You know who else was in Pearly? Now that since Cleavon Little came up, Sherman Hemsley. Yeah. As Gitmo.
And I did not watch the reboot the other night, but that got a lot of buzz.
Which the reboot?
Moving on up. They
the Jeffersons.
All in the Family and the Jeffersons. Yeah, they did it live the other night on ABC, I think.
Really, I missed that completely. I missed that completely.
I'll admit, there was all kinds of buzz because in the middle of the All in the Family reboot, there, I think it was Jamie Foxx messed up and kind of referred to it being a live show and then went on. And the Jeffersons, Will Ferrell was playing the neighbor.
I've got to go. Somehow this and frankly, you know, during these 5 weeks, it's hard.
Yeah, no. I didn't watch it. I just pulled up stuff the next day. Honestly, I forgot about it myself.
Too funny. Well, we'll break ourselves away. We'll tear ourselves away from the entertainment talk. Although I'll be hard pressed tomorrow and Friday not to just, you know, be bouncing off the walls waiting for Deadwood.
That's something I saw. I just read about that, and I knew you were a big fan. I never saw it. I don't have any.
You never saw it.
I never saw it.
Oh.
But I saw that they were doing the movie. I just read about that last night, and I thought, you were a big fan, so you'd be looking for that.
Johnny D too, but Friday night. The Tina and I are actually watching. We're going through all three seasons, and we've got it timed perfectly right up to Friday night.
I like that time perfectly. You're binging to lead right in.
Well, not that I haven't in the last 10 years waiting for this to come back. And there's a wonderful bittersweet piece in New Yorker about David Milch and you know he's facing dementia, and he's still working, and he has good days and not so good days. But if you haven't seen the piece about Milch in New Yorker, there was also a piece in Vulture, a similar piece. And, you know, everybody at the racetrack at Santa Anita, you know, he so generous and just adored. I mean, they had, you know, tons and tons of friends and people that he took care of, frankly, at the racetrack. You know, and then of course, so much crossover from the casts of Deadwood into Luck, and there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of emotion tied to this on Friday. Anyway, Seth, I talked to Sid Fernando earlier today, and I let Sid opine on yesterday's craziness between Senator Feinstein's office and then, you know, PETA adding to the chorus. What's your take on this?
I said before, the racing industry has to do a better job of stepping up to the plate and explaining themselves, and kind of one of my takes is just, and there have been a bunch of articles by people who clearly aren't familiar with the racetrack and the backstretch. You and I have been on the backstretch and know how much these people care for the horses. Are there bad actors? Yes. There are bad actors in every profession. But for the most part, these people really care about the horses. And my question is, when they knock horse racing obviously, as far as horses themselves, is the most visible occupation or place to be that there is, because it's a sporting event, and people are in the grandstands, and it's on television. So when something happens, it's very visible in horse racing. But my question is, when they talk about how tough horse racing is for horses, compared to what? I mean, I'll tell people to go on to Google and type in horses abandoned at a farm or horses dead on a farm. And, it's only anecdotal. Nobody keeps an empirical number of what happens to horses outside of a racetrack. And I'm not just talking thoroughbreds, any horses. You Google something like that, you will see there are articles, recent, of county officials find 12 dead horses on a farm, and yada, yada. And so I think people think in their mind, you stop horse racing and horses all wind up in a beautiful green meadow on a lovely spring day with a cool babbling brook running through it. But they don't. They wind up in real life, and horses are expensive to take care of, and some people can't afford that expense. And so away from the racetrack, horses run into bad situations too. And I think horses on the racetrack, yes, breakdowns happen. And yes, the racing industry should always strive to make it safer for horse and for rider. There's no question about that. But horses also on a racetrack, if a horse gets an infection, I think we've all seen, we noticed that he wasn't in his feed cup, so then we did a blood test, and there was a high white cell count, and we put him on antibiotics. Essentially, they'll realize within hours a situation will be taken care of if a horse has a problem. They realize colic and start treatment pretty quickly, and colic and laminitis are a couple of the main reasons horses pass away, not just on the racetrack, I'm talking in general. So if you're a farm in Wyoming, let's say, and the family works and they come home at 8 o'clock on a Friday night, no, Bessie hasn't been in her feed tub, do they give the call on the Friday night to the veterinarian that may be 45 minutes or an hour away, or do they wait a day or two and kind of think, do we want to pay for this? And so my point is, again, we can point to horse racing because it's very visible and say, gee, you know, very dangerous for horses on the racetrack. But again, compared to what, I just don't think people think realistically. You know, horses have a very unique physiology that is, we all know, kind of strange at times and can play into maladies. And so I don't know whether ending horse racing ends bad situations for horses overall. I think at the racetrack, as I say, there are also better situations in that they're constantly monitored. They're athletes. They make their money when they're healthy, and so people want them to be as healthy as possible. So I think the racing industry just has to do a better job of kind of pushing all of those kind of concepts.
Well, we certainly try, I think, and it's hard for me to look externally just because, you know, I think our audience is very much in tune to the game and to the industry. So we all kind of know, and even within this construct, my mission is always to, you know, to educate, and you know, that's why we try to flesh out, you know, so many topics in all areas, including, you know, some of the things that are being assailed erroneously by, you know, by these other outlets and by these critics that are, you know, just unaware of a lot of things that have gone on very successfully. And, you know, we're running out of time here, but, you know, people know what we're talking about, whether it's, you know, medication and aftercare and you know, so many other different things, monitoring of horses on track and pre-race and on and on and on. Seth Merrow, everybody, Equidaily.com, capital OTB. And you'll be down in New York next week, yes?
I think we head down on Thursday, so we'll see
you. All right. We will see you then. Seth Merrow, everybody, and we'll talk to him before that. Pete Fornatel, live from Italy today. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Andy Serling, Mike Welch, Clocker Report. Looks like free Thursday, and then Friday and Saturday you can buy it and cash. Rudy Brissett. A lot of good stuff from Rudy and Seth just now. Deja on the board. Thank you, Deja. Some good racing around today. Kind of a weird. It's always weird when you have a holiday week. Good luck if you're playing. HRRN coverage today at 3 here on the network. And we'll talk to you in the morning at the races.